Chapter 30. Chris. When Idris regained consciousness, it was Chris's turn on watch. She'd been spending the time recording responses to the liaison board's demands, all of which mentioned Idris's name. Some of the demands talked of patriotism, some spoke of Idris's recuperation and his need for their specialised care. Still more dealt with tenuous legal rights. Her real concern centred on what wasn't being said. She was worried that some cabal of Hugh representatives was being hastily convened to make an executive order allowing them to march in and take Idris for the good of the colonies. That would leave her with no legal power to stop them. They were on one of the Berlinhof orbitals, despite invitations to more lavish facilities planetside, and Chris had made sure they'd docked at the same yard as the damaged Heaven Sword, anything to keep Hugh at bay. The Parthenon's Thunderchild was also maintaining a battered, watchful orbit nearby. The Vulture crew were still taking advantage of Trine's tissue-thin ambassadorial credentials, which the Hiver Assembly, or at least its Berlinhof representatives, had somehow failed to revoke. Chris had no idea whether the Assembly was playing some complex game or just completely failed to understand the nuances of the situation. Hivers were an odd bunch, more human than human one moment, utterly alien the next. Then Idris croaked something, and she watched as he finally opened his eyes. Across the room, Trine abruptly stirred themselves, face flickering into being with their usual slightly superior smile. Trine had to stay in the room, apparently, or it wasn't a proper embassy, or that was their understanding of their responsibility. Chris's eyes flicked to the medical readouts, which all seemed within tolerance. The liaison board's doctor had been in again, though, although when he found out the list of things that had happened to Idris's poor body, he had just about given up in disgust. There was, he announced in high dudgeon, nothing more he could do. Apparently the crew had already broken every rule of his profession and trampled all over the Hippocratic Oath in the bargain. Not that, Chris suspected, he had much truck with any such oath himself, given his employers.
Right then, Idris said quietly, even as Chris was sending an alert to Kit, Ollie and Solace. I feel dreadful.
I'm beginning to think, she told him, that you pick fights with architects because it's the only way you can get a night's sleep. It was a terribly witty, brave little line. She'd spent ages handcrafting it as she waited by his bedside. Now it came out ruined because her voice was shaking. How much do you remember? Do you even remember?
Too much, he said hoarsely. I remember the architect left, and that was when... Actually, I remember a whole lot of me hurting, though that might be just the reminder I'm getting now, from all the parts that are still hurting. Damn, Chris, I feel like I died.
You maybe did, she choked out.
Again, huh?
You, Solace said you lost all brain function.
That right.
For 10 minutes. Nothing. Then you were back like you'd never been away. That's what she said. I mean, I was busy shouting at the liaison board ship.
They were helping too, he told her. Or one of them was.
Well, I know that now.
I think...
And his eyes weren't seeing her anymore. Or the room. Or anything so quotidian.
I think... It took my mind into it.
What?
Just reproduced the pattern of my mind. Or the electricity of it, the precise organisation that was me and constructed it inside itself. And then it put me back when it was done, exactly as I had been. Every neuron picking up where it had left off.
That's patently impossible. Probably Solace got it wrong. I mean, she's not a doctor. I mean, probably your brain just died.
Or that, yes.
Idris blinked philosophically, and one hand reached up to scratch at his chest. Chris stopped him.
What?
His eyes widened.
I seem to have a scar there.
You do, yes. Chris glanced at Trine, who was trying to look disinterested.
The sort of scar you mostly see after someone's tried to investigate cause of death. Big Y-shaped fellow, you know?
Idris couldn't help noting. That's right. Solace opened you up, Chris confirmed.
In the Vulture's command capsule?
Right there. Yes. Chris suddenly began to feel the strain of the last few days all at once. She clasped her hands to stop them trembling. She did it because your heart had stopped and she couldn't restart it. You weren't reacting to the drugs or to the shocks she was giving it, and we didn't have any nanotech. But she thought ahead. She had a contingency plan.
I guess she kept me going somehow.
Idris looked like he wanted to probe the sealant that had closed up the incision.
Did she put something in there?
Indeed, Trine observed. Something.
What was that then?
Me.
Idris opened his mouth, closed it, raised his eyebrows.
At the good Myrmidon's request, I donated 3 of my units to act as a pacemaker. She used them to restart and manage your cardiac functions. They remain inside you, so I suppose this makes us family or something. Personally, I feel a grand swell of sibling feeling somewhere within me. I'm sure you do too.
Idris tentatively fingered the ridge of sealant, still staring at Trine.
They are on autonomous secondment to your cardiovascular system, severed from my swarm. I won't be, manually tugging on your heartstrings, my old Confederate-turned-proxy relation. Worry you not.
Trine's face looked insufferably pleased with itself. Then the others were piling in. Kit first, then Ollie in her walker, and at last, Solace in her uniform coat. She sent Chris a glance that pleaded, "Is he really all right then?" And Chris sent her a nod.
"Oh, wow," Ollie observed. "You look really, really ill."
"Thanks," Idris said sourly, then blinked. "You look ropey yourself."
The specialist's exposed skin was blotchy with broken blood vessels, and the whites of her eyes had gone a solid red.
"That's because Trine's a shitty mechanic," she accused. "You're still alive, are you not, my dear ingrate?" Trine retorted. "And I would add, I've been performing a mechanic's work on your ship."
"Poorly."
"Work on your ship. And yet, I am the only one not drawing some manner of recompense,"
the Hiver finished haughtily. "All contracts to be negotiated ahead of performance," Kit chimed in merrily. The Hanny seemed to have come through the whole ordeal better than any of them.
"Perhaps I should start charging you for the use of my embassy,"
Trine suggested darkly. "Open to negotiation," Kittering announced.
"So," Idris looked from one to the other, "fill me in. The architect went away. As we are where we are, I assume it hasn't come back yet. What happened next?"
"It's been 2 days since then," Chris told him.
Mostly what's happened is we've been dancing around your bed because everyone is very deeply interested in you. Chris has been running interference, Ollie noted approvingly. What's that you said, Trine? Telling people to go to hell in such a way that they enjoy the trip, the Hiver supplied. It's been a privilege having you on the diplomatic staff.
But tell me they've been making preparations beyond that, Idris said weakly.
I think the consensus is that we've all had a nasty scare. But the Second Architect War has been headed off before it began. Thanks to you. Something buzzed in Idris's chest, just at the edge of hearing, as Trine's severed components did something to modulate his heartbeat.
But it really hasn't ended. It hasn't been headed off at all, he told them.
And at their collective blank looks, he explained,
They're coming back. They have to. They don't even want to, but they will. Do people seriously think this is over? And they're back to the politicking. Already.
A louder buzz then, as he tried to prop himself up in bed.
Idris, you can't just... Chris started.
But he was shaking his head, wild-eyed.
I need to speak to people. I need to tell them. Borodin, attacked, anyone. Get them. Call them. Trine, do ambassador stuff. Do something.
Hevea. Chief Larry was not much of a proponent of the walk and talk meeting for obvious reasons, but this time she'd decided to take the scenic route with Hevea Mundi. They were walking along a viewing gallery, set into the satellite that was the intervention board, hence the de facto new Mordant house. She donned a humanoid frame, just a subtle one, beneath her robe. If you didn't listen out for the whine of servos or note the odd shifting of struts about her hips, you'd almost miss it. Hevea shortened his own long stride to match her pace.
You've allowed yourself quite a lot of leeway on this one, she told him, staring out at the starry immensity beyond.
Berlinhof's blue horizon was just starting to show itself beneath their feet.
I'm aware that there's a disciplinary with my name on it, Chief, waiting in the wings, he confirmed stoically.
He had crossed several lines to extract Telemeye from Hugh custody, and it had paid off. But that didn't mean those lines magically moved to just beyond the toes of his sandals.
Ah, drama, she said dismissively. Not right now, Hevea. It's on your record. It's circling above you, ready to drop its payload, but we need every good agent we can get. Even those with a distressing tendency to think outside the box. Perhaps especially those.
Why did you do it, in the end?
Because I'd spoken to him. He'd been right about the architects returning, and he had more information than any of us.
Those are usually the sorts of people we detain, rather than letting them go, she observed dryly. But in this instance, the results certainly speak for themselves.
You'll tell me to go get him now, though, I take it.
Not outside the realms of possibility, she confirmed. Though if Borodin and his clowns do their job, we may not have to act. And I fear the matter may be taken out of our hands. But to move on to our next problem. Ever been to the hegemony, Hevea? The real hegemony, not just some turncoat human colony.
Couple of times. That's our next problem, is it?
This business with the Hieragrave Sathiel
and his fake architect evidence. I don't like it. I think the Esiel might have bitten off more than they can chew when they started taking on human converts. Human cults tend to proselytize, and it's changing the passive hegemonic dynamic. Mark my words, we'll have some flashpoints there in the next few years.
The hegemonies issued a formal statement on the Amaru.
I don't think the Esiel even understand the problem. All rather beneath them. Although, I'd like to think we've caused some consternation when we showed their damn relics aren't actually all that. I would like that very much. Bring them down to the mud, like the rest of us? She chuckled. A singular event. And here are our visitors, just ahead of schedule. The legendary efficiency of the warrior angels.
I don't...
Hevea squinted into the void. Were there 3 points of light out there, which had been absent a moment before? They were moving, cruising at an angle to Berlinhof, making an oblique approach. The Lady of the Night, the Sister of Mercy, the Witch Queen, Larry reeled off, staring past her own reflection. Yes, the Parthenon had 3 warships within striking distance, just a few days away. Until they were underway, we didn't even know they existed. Very hard to get intel from that quarter. Can't infiltrate spies into that sisterhood.
I know our own reinforcements have turned up too, Hevea advanced cautiously.
A grab bag of colonial military vessels had pitched in over the last few days. They'd been summoned by packet runners and the first wave of Far Lux refugees, expecting to go toe to doomed toe with an architect. Not that they'd have been in time, anyway. It had looked as though we could keep Tact and her mob in their place before their ships arrived. Allies we could put back in their box, once we didn't need them anymore. Yet with the Thunderchild, the Heaven Sword and these new arrivals, they can punch harder than we can, if it comes to it.
It won't come to it.
It won't, now they can punch harder, Larry replied with bleak humour. She sagged, and her exoskeletal frame didn't, doing odd things to the contours of her shoulders. Yes, I'm sure you'll be disappointed, but your disciplinary will have to wait. It's going to be all hands to the pumps, Agent Mundy. Now, and for the foreseeable future.
Chris.
We're within our rights to consider this an act of war, was the first thing Chris heard as the crew entered.
Because this time, the diplomats had started without them. The talks weren't taking place on a Partheni ship either, but in a well-appointed conference room on the Hue orbital. Although it seemed to Chris that the parties preferred to stand and shout at one another rather than sit in comfort.
If you choose to view it as an act of war, that's up to you. But see where it gets you, Mynheer Borodin.
Came Monitor Superior Tact's acid reply.
However, wearing my diplomat's mantle, I'd say our relief force shows our commitment to humanity in general, not just our own people, and our determination to defend them against any threat.
Approaching the square central table, Ollie tapped forward in her walker. She loudly yanked 2 chairs away with a metal leg, making room at the table for herself and Idris, whose walker she was also piloting. He hadn't much liked that, but he was almost endearingly hopeless at moving the thing about himself.
Ah, Mynheer Telemier.
Borodin turned smoothly to smile at them, as though he hadn't been shouting at the Partheni a moment before.
I'm delighted to see you with us again. I've been asked to formally extend the Council of Human Interests' sincere thanks. Your actions headed off a humanitarian disaster on a scale we've not seen since the war. And I add my own personal thanks to that. We owe you a great debt.
Does that mean you'll listen to me this time?
Idris rasped. He still looked 9/8 dead to Chris's critical eye, slumped in the walker with his bare feet dangling. Borodin directed a sideways look at Takht, who just stood watching. Seeing no help there, he sat so he was on a level with Idris.
Of course, Menhir. And I imagine you and your crew would like that recognition made into something more concrete.
It's not over, Idris said. They'll come back. Maybe here, maybe elsewhere. And soon too. Not in years, not in decades. Soon.
Borodin's face closed up.
With all respect, Menhir, how can you know such a thing?
I was in its mind, Idris explained tiredly. It did its level best to show me exactly that, to make me understand what was going on. The architects aren't doing this for fun. Something is making them come. They're under duress. Just something else's servants. Something that wants us gone. All of us.
All humans.
All thinking life. Look at Ash's people. Look at the Neiramathi. And it'll be the Hani and the Castigar in time. We're just the current project. They want us gone. Or at least, not concentrated on planets. And don't ask me why. I don't know why. I don't think the architects know either, if why is a concept they even have. But it's like this. The architects recognize humanity as life, as thinking life. They recognize themselves as thinking life too. That's a kinship. The architects went away when we made them face up to that. And now their masters have caught up with them and set them on us again because their masters don't give a damn.
Masters or creators? Takht asked, with admirable sang-froid.
Idris shrugged painfully.
No idea.
Well, Borodin swallowed, and doubtless panicky communications were already radiating out from the orbital, sent by the clerks listening in on this conference.
Menhir Telemier, I do hope that you're wrong.
Menhir Borodin, I have been inside the architect's head. If you have someone who is in a better position to know than me, wheel them out. Have them state their case. What has Andekka Talmar told you?
That you went further than she could, Borodin admitted.
Well then, the war's on, Menhir, Monitor. Maybe I've bought Berlinhof a period of grace, but that's all. Now I've said my piece.
Chris saw him looking around to check on the crew.
Let's go.
You must have more to say, Borodin said quickly. Whatever you learned, what you experienced, we need to know everything.
I'll send you a report.
Menhir Telemier, we really do need you.
I thought we needed you before, but now, if the architects are still coming for us, we need you more than ever.
Borodin had stood again, pushing his chair back.
The liaison board wants, over my dead body, Menhir.
My client, Chris broke in, as the diplomat glowered at her, is exercising his rights of free travel and association as a colonial citizen.
There is currently no special order restricting his movement. He is also travelling within the aegis of Ambassador Delegate Trine, here at my left hand right now. My client will regard any attempt to prevent him from leaving this room or this orbital as an attack on his liberties. It could also be an act of aggression against the Hiver Assembly in aggregate. In addition, we are in the presence of Parthenon representatives. Should any hostile act be committed by Hugh, they may take diplomatic action of their own. It was all just word salad, really. It hardly gave Idris any ironclad protection against Hugh. However, if Borodin felt that the Parthenon, or even the Hivers, might take her words seriously, that could be enough. That uncertainty left a gap that they might just be able to squirrel through. Borodin looked sick, almost desperate, that smooth veneer of etiquette peeling away.
Mynheer Tolemier, he said softly, do not turn your back on your people. Please. We are in dire need of intermediaries. A new class to protect our worlds against the architects or their masters. Since Avienne is dead, we've lost the intermediary's chief teacher and inspiration, the one rock they had. We need you to take Xavien's place. You wouldn't ever have to face an architect again, even. Just help us with the intermediary program. And believe me, you won't want for anything. The colonies would make you their hero.
Stop. A barely audible plea.
I can't. I'm not strong like Xavien. I can't do it.
You've proved you are, Borodin started, but Idris held up a shaky hand.
Xavien had to watch us die, he said. Us volunteers, the first class. I remember all the faces who were there at the start, who didn't survive the conditioning, the surgery, the chemical diet. Who didn't survive you trying to make us into her? And I saw how it hurt her, how she felt every death. But she kept on because she had to, and we kept on because we had to as well. Because there was a war on. 30, Mynheer. 30 of us walked out of the programme as ints. And now you have the liaison board, and you take criminals and put them through the factory. If you're lucky, then one int walks out alive out of every 100 who go into the grinder. And those ints of yours? You want to know something about them? They're useless, Mynheer Borodin. They'll never fend off an architect. None of them. Or almost none.
If Idris looked 9/8 dead, Borodin was pushing for 10/8 himself.
Why? He managed. Because they don't want to be there. They're slaves.
A leash contract is slaves.
Enforced labour, without right or choice. And you know what the architects are, for all their power? Slaves, Mynheer. And if you're a slave sent to chastise someone, and that someone sends their own slave out to plead for their master's life, how well disposed do you think you'd be? Volunteers, Mynheer. You cherish and take care of Andekka Talmar and anyone else like that who give themselves willingly to the process. More of them will survive, for one thing, and what you get out of it will be worth having. Not just a tame commercial pilot, but someone who can defend your worlds.
Chris watched Borodin's face, saw his quick mind changing tack. There will be volunteers, he promised. Once people understand that the threat is back and it's real, they'll put themselves forward, just like you did in the war. Idris nodded, looking defeated.
You're probably right, he whispered. But I still couldn't watch them die. Because our brains aren't the same. Not any of us. Everyone gets cut up differently, trying to shape our brains to match Xavier's. It's stupid, wasteful, and mostly it fails. I couldn't live with it. I'm sorry, Mynheer.
Mynheer Tellemier, Borodin said, at his most reasonable despite his pallor. Your crew would be compensated. You would be compensated. We would do everything we could to insulate you from the negative aspects of the role.
He blinked. Mynheer Tellemier?
A stab of worry went through Chris, because Idris was very still. It wasn't inconceivable that he'd actually died on them, right then and there. Then he said,
No.
Although there was a thoughtful tone to it.
No, Mynheer. I'm not your man. And I'll go against the architects again, no doubt. I'll likely die doing it, next time or the time after. Because even success kills in this game.
He shook his head, and suddenly everything seemed to be funny to him.
Oh, Mynheer, I won't abandon anyone. I just won't take on this responsibility. I volunteered back in the day because I was needed. I'll do my bit now for the same reason. However, I won't go near you or your liaison board. Not now. Not ever.
Solace. Monitor Superior Tact had left for the Thunderchild by the time various conversations amongst the Vulture crew had been concluded. So Solace had to commandeer another packet runner to get her over from the orbital to her superior's ship. And every moment she was gone, she worried in case the Vulture God might not be there when she returned. Perhaps the crew would reconsider what they'd said and just take off without her. No matter what she or anyone tried to pretend, she wasn't quite one of them, and maybe never would be. Tact's room had holographic representations of every Partheni ship in the system projected around the walls, the display dominated by the 5 warships currently at her disposal. More Hue forces were doubtless on their way, and that kind of pissing match was likely to end with someone doing something rash, unless the Parthenon backed down. After all, Hue couldn't back down, because they were above their own administrative capital. Situations like these made Solace glad she wasn't a career diplomat.
You've requested a face-to-face meeting, so I take it you're here to make a final report on your mission, Tact observed.
She was watching those warship images, each one with the face of its exemplar projected over it, all those sister-close likenesses.
Mother, I am, Solace confirmed.
Tact nodded.
When I sent you to turn Tellemier, nobody could have known just what was about to erupt. I don't doubt you did absolutely everything in your power to recruit him peaceably.
She brought up a virtual board and dispatched a brief communique. The display showed it as arrowing off to the Lady of the Night.
Of course, recent events show us as even more in need of an intermediary program. We are looking at the other 2 first-class ints who yet live, though neither of them appears as disaffected as Tellemier. I understand he's not a joiner, though. Not them, not us, not anyone.
Solace took a deep breath.
Mother, he will join us.
Tact went very still.
Clarify, daughter. Are you stating a fact or merely your belief in some future change of heart?
He has agreed to come with us and help us with our intermediary program. With conditions.
Well, of course, with conditions. He's a colonial spacer, and they never did anything for free if they could avoid it.
But there's a jag of excitement in Tact's crisp voice.
How did you possibly manage it, Solas?
Tact had turned away from the display entirely now, the Partheni fleet circling unregarded behind her head. Her face crinkled abruptly into an oddly fond smile, which looked utterly alien on her face.
Don't tell me the media types are true, and the colonials are hopeless romantics after all.
Solas felt herself colouring.
No, Mother. Idris... Mynheer Telemier knows that we will need intermediaries. That is, all humanity, all intelligent life will need them. And he doesn't trust the liaison board to help. What's more, the colonial method of developing intermediaries is flawed, wasteful. Telemier said only a rare few have the right sorts of brains, and they can't know before the procedures whether a brain's right or not, but...
Yes?
Solas looked at the ships, at their captains, seeing in them Tact's own features, and knowing her own were just like them. A genetic legacy of Dr. Parsifer's genius and hubris.
We vary less than colonials, Mother. If we can train one Partheni intermediary, we should be able to train many, with far less failure, far less loss. If. That's what Idris is betting upon. That our more limited genetic range has that potential. That we can raise a class of ints without killing most of them. Because we're alike. More alike than any two colonials who aren't close family.
Tact digested that for a moment, then glanced up with a sly expression. Perhaps she was wondering if Idris and Solas's shared history hadn't played some part after all. Solas wondered that too. She really did. And these were odd thoughts to have about someone who was the wrong gender, and whose chest she'd been wrist deep in not so long ago. In those Sacvefin media types, the colonials were always fighting for people's hearts. But that probably wasn't what they meant.
They had conditions, you said, Tact reminded her.
Idris wants to bring along the Vulture God and its crew.
I'm sure we can throw sufficient largesse their way.
They don't just want credits. They want a contract with the Parthenon, Solas clarified. They want to work for us, legally. They think that will at least give them some protection against Hugh interference. Of course, they'll do their best to outwit us on contract terms and so on, the usual. But they're good people, and good at what they do. And who knows when we might need a shabbily maintained salvage vessel, Tact finished for her. Yet strange times, strange tools, yes. Do we get the Hiver Academic in the bargain? I couldn't work out whether they were crew or not. Delegate Trine will go wherever they can learn most about the architects, which means not yoking themselves to us or anyone else. But if we have an appropriate research opportunity, they'll come running. If we want them.
We do, Tact agreed. Which brings us to you, murmured on Executor Solas. Where do you see yourself in all of this?
Solas straightened, feeling her future fall out of her own hands after this brief.
I'm at your disposal, Mother, as always. Although, I did wonder if the newly contracted Vulture God would need a formal Parthenon liaison to smooth over our new working relationship.
And you're volunteering yourself, I take it?
Yes, Mother.
For a difficult moment, She thought Tact was about to pass judgment on her. Something about unsoldierly sentiment, the danger of attachments outside your sorority. The general perfidy of colonials as a class, and male colonials in particular. But Tact simply said, "Very well. You have yourself a new mission." And she regarded Solace with a faint smile. Perhaps, in her youth, she had even watched the same kind of media types.
"Call the vulture god and say we're on," Tact continued, "and tell them to get that little Hanalambra factor over here to talk terms. Don't let them think they can simply name a price either. If it's a contract they want, it's a contract they'll get."
"Yes, Mother."
And Solace turned smartly on her heel and marched out. There was a future out there, and it was a terrible one. It included war and whole planets dying in the shadow of architects. They were living in a fractured galaxy, and it must come together, or it would fall into darkness, one star at a time. Yet just then, her own personal star seemed bright. And she was smiling to herself as she went to hail the vulture.